And now, the show that's all about baseball.
That's when the game, to me, is at its best.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Bigelow Tea. I Promise, official eye vitamin of the Boston Red Sox. Bravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers and Window World.
On Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, me and Bushy, before the New York Mets start, just kind of going back and forth, trying to figure out a delivery that would be simple, that I could repeat. Kind of taking out that first step in the windup where my weight shifts to the left and then back to the right. Then I'm having to get on it down the slope. So there was just, there was too much going on. So we just tried to eliminate the first step and just kind of put myself in a good position to throw the baseball. For me, now I just worry about getting my leg up, keeping my weight over my backside, and then from there, just throwing the baseball down the hill.
There you go, Garrett Richards, public enemy number one 4 weeks ago. Now the star of the Red Sox, at least last night. How do you like that for a turnaround? 617-779-0985. And now, look, I'm man enough to admit, well, when something changes, I don't want to say what I'm wrong, because I'm not sure that I'm wrong yet. But Garrett Richards last night, it's kind of a big spot. And I'll tell you why. This is exactly the situation the Red Sox had earlier in the year, season opening series. You lose the first two games. Richards goes out to the mound to avoid a sweep, and he puked all over himself against the Baltimore Orioles. Absolutely threw up on himself against the Baltimore Orioles. And in the process, looked like a guy who'd never been on a mound before. Fine, good arm. Yes, I get it. He can throw 95. Big deal. Like I could find bar stools with a million guys who could throw 95 miles an hour, but if you don't know where the hell it's going, what difference does it make? Then the Mets game comes, which is 4 weeks ago. He's made four starts beginning with that Mets game. And dare I say that the guy's actually been pretty good? Maybe really good? So last night, six innings, five hits, no runs. First time all year in any outing he's allowed no runs. Again, same spot he was with Baltimore. And he goes out and pitches the Red Sox to a win. And in his last four games, Garrett Richards has an ERA of 2.16. And how about this, Matt McCarthy? 25 innings, 26 strikeouts, 5 walks.
Always believed, Mass. Always believed in Garrett Richards. Let me tell you, let the record show here tonight, May 14th, 2021. I always believed in this guy. Always loved this signing.
So correct me if I'm wrong, Jimmy Stewart, which day was the post game that Matt McCarthy lost his marbles and wanted the Red Sox kicked out of the city?
That would be the Garrett Richards start.
Yep. Okay, I didn't remember if that was the Saturday or the Sunday.
It was the Sunday. Yeah, okay. It was the Sunday. Yep.
So do you think he's here for good?
No, I don't. And here's the thing. Listen, credit to Garrett Richards. Credit to the Red Sox for realizing there was something fundamentally wrong with his mechanics. But he's still Garrett Richards, all right? And when I say that, this is what I mean by that. This guy's been a pretty good pitcher throughout his career when he's been on the mound. And that's ultimately what I come to here, Maz. This guy's pitched how many innings? Like 140 innings over the course of the last 5 years, not counting what we've had, you know, this season, entering this season, something like 140 innings over the course of 5 years. When's he going to get hurt? That's ultimately how I feel. Listen, I'll take it. I'll ride this out. This is the pitcher that you were hoping you were going to get when you signed him for $10 million, which is the most money Heim Bloom has spent on a player. You were hoping you got the Garrett Richards, who's been a pretty effective big league pitcher throughout the majority of his career, and they found that. Now I just hope he stays healthy, and I think that's still a major concern. It's why I was opposed to this signing in the first place, why I didn't want them to sign him, because I don't buy the fact that he's going to stay healthy. I was hoping you'd get an effective pitcher when he's been healthy, which you've gotten over the last month, and boy, does it change the complexion of this team and this rotation that he is healthy and he is effective right now. I'm not counting on it, but these last four starts have been pretty good. Even I'll admit that, Mass.
Well, so when you look at it overall, and I have to admit that him coming around here now, you look at that rotation and you say, there's really not much of a slip now when anybody takes the mound.
You have a chance every single night. And what a difference that is from last year. You can go out every single
night. Where you had no chance every single night.
Right. And it goes to show you the importance of quality starting pitching. I don't think they have elite starting pitching, but you've got five guys you can give the ball to, and you're going to say, we're not going to lose because of that guy tonight. Oh, that's huge. That's absolutely huge.
So, look, there are a couple of things that strike me about Garrett Richards, Matt. And Jimmy Stewart, feel free to chime in as well. And those of you that are out there, I see a couple of you already on the phone, 617-779-0985. We'll get a bunch of things during this hour. We're going to start Garrett Richards. I want to get to the Red Sox offense. Shohei Ohtani's in town, as is Mike Trout, but frankly, I don't care about Mike Trout.
And only a generational talent, but it goes to show you.
I mean, he's a fabulous player, but Mike Trout, to me, has ceased being interesting a long, long time ago.
Agreed.
And at the end of the program, we'll talk about a guy who, in the Red Sox minor league system, and listen closely, because it's been a while since we've said this, a guy in their minor league system that is taking the organization by storm, like a potential phenom of a prospect for the Red Sox, in the minors. I'm not talking about Garrett Whitlock. Okay, we'll get to him later in the show already, and McCarthy's got some inside information there. But back to Garrett Richards first. Last night, I'll admit, I can't believe this guy turned it around like he did. I mean, he looks like two different guys now in terms of throwing the ball over the plate. Now, the part that I find stunning is that this guy needed a pitching coach to tell him that his delivery sucked.
Right.
This guy's been in the big leagues for 10 years. He's bounced around from place to place. His delivery was absolute dog food when he came here. And look, I'm no pitching mechanics guy. I'm no hitting mechanics guy. But I can look at a guy and say, holy crap, that is bad, and holy crap, that is good. You look at a guy like Garrett Whitlock's delivery and you say, it's pretty sound, not a lot of moving parts, steps towards the plate, delivers the ball, throws a ton of strikes, pretty basic. Will he get hit? I don't know. I mean, we'll see over time. He's got good movement. I like his stuff. So you never know how it's going to go. With Richards, it took 5 seconds to watch him with arms and legs flailing everywhere. As I said, Matt, he looks like Doc Ock on the mound.
Yeah, he looks like me out there, which is not a good thing. Just long-haired, tall Matt McCarthy out there throwing. You've got no idea where the hell it's going. It's all herky-jerky. You were so right. I mean, this guy, how the hell did he even get to that point and was still pitching in the big leagues? It's remarkable, the turnaround, really.
So now when people say, do I believe now that he's here for the long haul? My answer is no. No, I don't, because I think that this guy's going to lapse right back into what he was at some point. And at the end of the year, if he ends up being a 500 pitcher and he can give him, call it 160 innings, and let's say he goes 9-9, okay, something like that, that's worth $10 million in this day and age.
Oh, absolutely.
That'll be fine. I'll take that as a win. I don't think you're going to get what you've been getting over the last four starts, which is a 2.16 ERA. So, by the way, I looked this up. In the last, call it, you know, 3.5 weeks of Major League Baseball, his 2.16 ERA among pitchers now with 20 innings. Okay, so let's say guys who have made four starts.
Yeah.
Where do you think that 2.16 ERA ranks?
I'm going to say top five.
Okay, 26th.
Really?
26th.
And I know offense and hitting has been down in the last 4 weeks, but I mean, when you're talking 2.16, that's elite. That's shocking to me.
Okay.
Even with the understanding that hitting is way down in baseball, and it feels like even in the last month, even more so.
Okay, so this is what I'm telling you, that I don't think it's all that special right now. And it's better. I mean, it's way better than what he was. But the point is, it's easier to pitch now than maybe ever before, including 1968.
I would agree.
So let's see how this plays out. But has he been better? Yes. Now, I still think the guy's a mental case, though. Jimmy Stewart, the other cut that we have from Garrett Richards, where he talks about pitching coach Dave Bush and how his connection with Bush has helped facilitate this turnaround and what have you. So here's Garrett Richards and how Bush has impacted him.
It's awesome. The terminology and the way we bounce things off of each other. It's one thing to be able to be a smart pitching coach, but to be able to, you know, give me that information in a way that I can apply it is kind of the next step. You know, there's plenty of people that know a lot about pitching, but as far as translating the information in a way that a player can apply it and understand it is huge. The fact that Bushy, you know, used to play baseball at the big league level, is pretty easygoing guy for the most part, relates to me. So we kind of vibe off each other. We've been able to sit down and kind of figure out, you know, what's going to make me get back in the strike zone. And
okay, so, and that's the end of it. Sorry, I thought that went on. So you know what that tells me? Like, all the stuff he talks about there, boy, it's really important to be able to relay the information. It's not just about having the information. And then, you know, he's a former big leaguer. How many pitching coaches do you think are former big leaguers who have pretty good people skills? A million? A million? Like, all of a sudden, this guy is making it sound way more complicated than it is. And this is what worries me about Garrett Richards, that all of a sudden now it's like, well, look at all the things he had. Maybe the problem over the years wasn't the pitching coaches. Maybe it was Richards.
Potentially. I hear that a different way, though, and it goes to kind of this analytics-driven thing in baseball. You immediately think of somebody like a Brian Bannister, right, who was the head Red Sox pitching nerd here for quite some time. All in on the analytics, all in on the information, but how do you relate that and relate that to a guy and say, hey, listen, your mechanics are out of whack, instead of saying, well, your spin rate was good last start. Well, dude, you're all over the place. Why don't we, simplify these mechanics a little bit? I almost view that in some ways as an anti-analytics, anti-nerdification of baseball statement, because he's probably been in organizations, and listen, the Red Sox, certainly do the exact same thing, where he's probably hearing from people, giving him all this information and all this data, and nobody said to him, well, your delivery's just completely out of whack. Why don't we simplify it? This is to me, he's giving credit to the old school baseball guys. He even says he pitched in the big leagues. He's easygoing. That's to me saying Dave Bush is more of an old school baseball guy. And he approached me and just said, let's simplify things here a little bit.
Yeah. So listen, Matt, you may be right. I'm just telling you, I think this guy overthinks everything.
Well, I mean, that is true.
He overthinks everything. And it wouldn't surprise me if Dave Bush went to him with analytics and said, look, here's your spin rate on your curveball. Here's your velocity. These are all things that, if we compare you to other pitchers, make you elite. And here are the numbers. Okay, that make you way above average. Maybe not elite. Way above average. If you can simplify your delivery and just get it over the plate, your stuff will play. Mm-hmm. So, but I think in his head, he needed to see that the spin rate and the velocity and the movement and all that stuff was, I think he's one of these guys that overthinks everything. So they got him to simplify the delivery as a way of saying your stuff will play better if you simplify the delivery. And look, in all honesty, Dave Bush isn't a guy that a lot of people have talked about yet with this Red Sox team, and I think we should.
He's done a good job, hasn't he?
Because the pitching on this team has been a major surprise.
They've overachieved.
Major.
That's a reflection on him.
Now, again, the bullpen's a different story. I'd like to see him work his magic with Darwin's and Hernandez, if he could do that.
Yeah, good luck.
Like, I'd like to see some of those guys in the bullpen refine their deliveries and throw strikes with greater frequency and all of that stuff. But the rotation? If we're saying that Dave Bush has had a hand in it, and to me, if you're going to blame the pitching coach at times when things go bad, you give the pitching coach credit. I give Dave Bush all the credit in the world. I'm just telling you, this guy, Garrett Richards, boy, he must be a pain in the ass to work with. There are some pitchers that are easy to work with. And like, to me, Matt, a veteran guy who believes in an old traditional approach, goes to the organization and says, just give me one or two things, and I'll take care of the rest. Okay, don't clutter my head with too much stuff. This guy thinks the opposite. I think he wants more and more information, and it completely gets his head spinning. And so they have to refrain from giving him too much because he wants it, and I think it confuses him. That said, that was a big win last night. That was a big win. Again, you're going against a good team. You're looking at a sweep. By the way, you outscored them in the series. You lost 2 out of 3 because you lost the close games, and you won the blowout, which is consistent with what the Red Sox have done this year. When they play the close, low-scoring game, they've been losing it. When they play the higher-scoring game, they win it because their pitching's not good enough to win 4-1 or 3-2, which are the scores of the first two games. But they piled on early last night. They got themselves a nice big lead, and Richards, to his credit, took it through 6 innings. And he even blamed himself for issuing walks, which I loved hearing. I felt like, okay, now there's some accountability.
He got a coat and he's feeling better.
But the lineup, oh man, they exploded last night. It was nice to see that. We'll add them to the discussion and get to your calls. I see you all there. And you can let it out with me and Matt McCarthy over the next 45 minutes. 617-779-0985. The offense and your calls next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. Talking bases on balls.
Huge ones.
It's the Baseball Hour with Tony Mass on your home for Boston Sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
One out. And a line shot base into center field. Chavis will be in to score easily. RBI number 33 for J.D. Martinez. And the Red Sox grab the 1-0 lead. Swing and a drive deep down the left field line. He hooked it into the corner. And it is gone.
There it is.
That's a home run.
You got to be aggressive.
A two-run blast, number 8 for Xander Bogaerts. It was close into the corner. Swing high, fly ball, that's center field, that's very deep, and it is gone. Bobby D crushes one. Just to the left of the flagpole. The Red Sox swinging a shillelagh tonight. They lead it 5-0. And that one's ripped out into the corner. That's going to get all the way to the wall. Araújo in the score. J.D. on to third. Safe to say that Xander is out of his mini slump.
Swinging trapezes through circles of flame.
They were fighting at the bat rack last night. That thing was a bloodbath right from the very beginning. The Red Sox come out hammering against Sean Manaea, who is it Sean Manaea?
Manaea, yeah.
For some reason, I thought his name was Seth. Like, I don't know why that just popped into my head. Anyway, Sean Manaea, who no-hit them a few years back.
Yeah, he owns them, and
he's been pitching well lately. That sort of came out of nowhere last night. I thought they were in deep trouble going into that game. Richards goes 1-2-3 in the first inning on 13 pitches, I think it was, and then it was T-ball. Chavis doubled, hustle play, which he's getting way too much credit for, by the way, but that's another story. Then Martinez singles, Bogaerts homered, 3-0. Richards goes out there, allows a 1-0 double, gets out of the inning. By the time he goes to the mound for the third inning, it's 6-0, game over. So I will say this about Richards, that I thought the performance or the ask of him got really easy after the first couple innings. Mm-hmm. But even so, putting up the 0 to start the game, important. You had to get control of that game early, and for the most part, I thought he did that.
Yeah, working around that double was kind of a sneaky big moment in that game last night, Maz, because, again, it was early on. The Red Sox hadn't put a hurt on Manaea at that point just yet, and you're like, oh, he's going to start to give it back here a little bit. Nope, worked around it. That was a good moment for him.
And as you can tell, if you listen to that, the highlights, they were roping the ball.
Yeah, they were.
There were no cheapies there. They were hitting bullets all over the field.
I'm sure the exit velocity was outstanding.
I think they said there were like 4 or 5 hits over 105 miles an hour or something like that. I don't know what that means, but I think it means that they were hit hard, which you could tell by watching.
That's Franchi-level hard, Maz.
617-779-0985. Drew's in Boston on Garrett Whitlock. Go ahead.
Hey, Tony, how you doing? So I'm guessing that, first of all, it's like serenity now when I start to think about how this bullpen's used. Last night in a situation where there was no reason, he blew your best bullpen arm, okay? And a guy who now, because of the way that he's used, you will not be able to use him all weekend when you're probably going to have situations that you're going to need that arm in Garrett Whitlock. He could have used him on Tuesday after 2 full days off, Wednesday after 3 full days off. He chose to wait, and by now he needed to work. And now he's blown. And it's just every day you're like, what are you doing, Cora? What are you doing?
Okay, so Drew, I don't feel like you do about it every day because I think they have limited options out there. But I will say this about Garrett Whitlock. I feel like it's predetermined. Mm-hmm. I think that they're going into these series and they're saying, well, when we need it, Whitlock's going to pitch in this game, whenever we have a need, because it doesn't feel like it has anything related to the score. Cora pitched him early on when they were down. Then he pitched him in a couple of spots where they were up, and it just kind of fell that way. I mean, the game in Minnesota, if you remember, the first time he got in with a lead, it kind of happened that way before he got in the game.
Yep.
So they were ready to bring him in when they were down. They went ahead, and Cora brought him in anyway.
Yeah, I think that was a Baltimore game, the second Baltimore series. Wasn't that Rodriguez's first start? Either way, the situation you're describing is correct.
Yeah, I just think that they decide ahead of time, this is how we're going to do it with this kid. We're going to pitch him on Thursday this week. And so if it, depending on how the starter goes, he could be the first guy out of the pen. He might have to pitch the 7th and the 8th. We'll see how it goes. But I honestly feel with Whitlock, they predetermine it.
Yeah, I think the important thing to understand here, Maz, at least this is the way I view it with Whitlock, is he is a Rule 5 guy. So we do have to keep in mind that if it weren't for the fact that he was a Rule 5 draft pick, he would not be with the Red Sox right now. He would probably be in AAA.
No question.
At this point, they are managing him as if he is a starting pitcher. However, they cannot send him to Worcester and have him start games there, so they are almost using him in a starter-like mentality out of the bullpen because it's predetermined which days he's going. He's going to pitch in that game essentially no matter what. They are using the fact that they have to have, or they're, you know, because they have to have him on the roster, they are managing him like he's a starter out of the bullpen. And unfortunately, that's just the way they have to do it. Whitlock is for next year and beyond. Sometimes he's going to pitch in important games this year. Sometimes he's not. They're just managing him in a really unique situation, and I think Red Sox fans need to understand that.
Yeah, so look, again, if you look at the outings, they generally come every 3 or 4 days.
Yep.
And in this case, he had 5 days off. He hadn't pitched since the 7th. So, you know, now there was one outing in there where he pitched twice in the span of 3 days. He pitched on the 5th and the 7th. But every other time he's been out there, it's been 3 or 4 yeah. days, and they're using him for multiple innings. That's generally how it's going.
And the 5th and the 7th, wasn't that in a stretch where the bullpen was kind of taxed? They probably had to go to him and say, you know, we need an inning tonight, you know, something like that.
Yeah, that could be it. I don't
remember. If I recall correctly.
No, and yeah. Listen, I don't remember Matt, but you're probably right. John's in Brookline. John, go.
Hey, Matt, so going back a couple of games, I saw something. It was like, whoa, what was that? Franchi Cordero had an at-bat where he had a swing that it looked out of place, just so bad. Like, there's, you know, there's guys who slump, and, like, Bogaerts had a swing. He was totally fooled. But it's like he is just seems like he's not even remotely close. And I'm wondering, what's the answer there?
Okay, the answer is he can't play. And you know what? I've come to this conclusion. By the time the Red Sox get the players to be named in this deal, they will have gotten 5 players for Andrew Benintendi. Okay? 5. Cordero was the 5th from the very beginning. I can't possibly look at Chaim Bloom seriously if he thinks that Cordero was the number one option, you know, the number one get in the deal. And we know that he wasn't. We know that he wasn't. So, look, I think they said, we'll take a shot. We need an outfielder. We're trading Benintendi. We're going to get some prospects back, and we'll take a shot on Cordero to see if he can play, and he can't. So now they're going to keep trying because it's not costing them games. They're still tied with Oakland now for the second-best record in the league, I guess, best on winning percentage, because Chicago's actually ahead of both of them now. But you get the idea. I don't think, you know, Cordero was not a target of that deal. I'm like, Chaim Bloom knows more than that. Tom is in Stoughton on Garrett Richards. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, man, how you guys doing?
Good.
So, Garrett Richards, I've been watching the season, and a lot of guys in the media were really down on him to start. And, yeah, I believe he's a California guy. And it's true. If you know California people, they do not deal with cold weather. And it was cold and damp, and he has turned it around. And I watched last night and heard the interview with the about his comments about the pitching coach. And I'm a professional trainer, and I teach my teachers all the time. It's not how well you can do a movement. It's how well you can communicate it to the other person.
Okay, Tom. Tom, I'm going to stop you there. Let me just ask you this thing about the California thing and the weather. Where's Tom Brady from?
Not everybody. Just because you're there, not everybody. Brady's tougher mentally, but a lot of them, I've lived out there for periods.
Okay, so I tell you what. Yeah, no.
They're not the same.
No, I get it. I'm going to cut you off, though, because you touched on the real thing. It's got nothing to do with where you're from. It's mental toughness. Tom Brady has mental toughness. Garrett Richards doesn't. So, like, the cold weather thing, if you got a thing about cold weather, why did you sign with Boston?
Right.
What are you doing? He's played for the Angels and the Padres his whole career. He's a California kid. Then he comes here and he complains that he has to wear a jacket.
10 million reasons to come here.
Yeah, too bad. Too bad. You're going to come here, you have to pitch in cold weather. Figure it out. So again, I didn't mean to jump down your throat. I just don't want to get into the whole, you know, I was a trainer and this and, you know. The bottom line is, this is the big leagues. We're not bringing along 14-year-olds here anymore. A completely different thing. McCarthy's got your headlines, and when we come back, the one guy you should want to watch in this series this weekend. The one guy you should want to watch. We'll tell you who that is when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The show where it's always a full count.
Oh, I like this. Yeah!
The Baseball Hour with Tony Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Otani's doing from the mound, and as a position player, it's fun to watch from afar, and it's good for the sport. He's that good, both sides. It seems like the sport stops to watch him. He's been great.
Alex Cora on Shohei Ohtani, pitcher slash outfielder for the Angels, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And I'll tell you, Ohtani to me is just great entertainment, great thing for baseball. I felt this from I'm not alone. The second he came into the big leagues.
Oh, I was following this guy over in Japan. I was that into him.
One of the most intriguing talents in the game, right? He's got 10 home runs already. He's got an ERA in the low twos. I didn't realize, someone called up today, he's walked 20 guys already this year or something like that. His walk totals are off the charts. And I went back and looked at his rookie year, and his walk totals weren't anywhere near like they are now. So I don't know what the hell's going on with him in terms of his control. But the worst news I can give you today about this weekend series with the Angels is that Ohtani is not pitching in it.
I know, I'm so bummed about that.
So now,
it sucks.
I haven't even seen the lineups. I'm assuming he's in the lineup tonight for the Angels?
The Angels did not have a lineup earlier, about a half hour ago. I very much assume he's in the lineup.
Okay, so I know he pitched on Tuesday.
He's the designated hitter and batting second.
Okay, so I'm glad, he'll be hitting, which is great. And listen, this guy, for people who don't know, Ohtani's 6'4", 220. I mean, he's a big dude. Okay, he's a big guy. His home runs are not cheap.
No, they are not.
I mean, this guy is like the Japanese Babe Ruth, down to the tape measure shots, the whole nine yards. And so the only disappointing part is that he is not pitching in this series, and Cora is right. He's a show for baseball. He is one of the few guys in the game that I think would have appeal to people across all sorts of demographics because he's unique. He is, someone called him a unicorn.
He's the sports unicorn to me. We have never seen anything like this. Not only have you and I not seen anything like this, Maz, our parents, our grandparents, they hadn't seen anything like this. This has basically never happened, in baseball before. You have to go back to Babe Ruth. Really, that's the era of baseball. The dead ball era, guys who were playing both ways. It is awesome. It is one of the coolest things I've experienced as a baseball fan, maybe ever, watching this guy. I just wish he weren't in Anaheim. I mean, that sucks. Can you imagine if he were in New York or Boston or Philadelphia or Chicago or even the Cardinals, something like that? Oh, he belongs in a place like that. Every sports fan in America should know about this guy, and I feel like baseball still needs to do a better job marketing him.
Tell you what, even if you were with the Dodgers, I don't know if you said Dodgers.
No, but even if you were with the Dodgers, it would make a difference.
I mean, it's like, really, he is great, great to watch. And again, just because he's different. He's different. And honestly, the sound that was sent in tonight from Johnny Miller, WBZAM, was a question about Ohtani and Trout. And I cut it off after Ohtani. I don't give a rat's ass what Cora thinks about Mike Trout. I think Mike Trout's boring.
Even though he's statistically one of the greatest players in the history of the game.
Yeah,
it's
maybe,
so true.
Maybe top five.
Yeah.
I mean, he's up there. And I'm done with Trout. Look, he's a fabulous talent. I don't find the guy interesting. Joe's in New York. Joe, go.
Hey, guys, I really appreciate you taking my call. Matt, I heard you say the other day when you filled in that you watch a lot of Vanderbilt baseball.
Yes.
So I was just wondering if you're familiar with J.J. Bleday.
Yes.
He was drafted fourth overall by the Marlins. He's in Double A.
Yeah, he was on the Cape. I forget where he was on the Cape, but I saw him in the Cape League All-Star game.
He was in Orleans.
Yes. Yeah. He was one hell of a player down there.
He was a buddy of mine at camp growing up, so I know it's a really random question, but I was just wondering if you could give me an assessment and what you might think he could be in the big leagues.
I can't, really give you an assessment as to what he's going to be in the big leagues. I remember watching him on the Cape, and listen, in the Cape League All-Star game, you're like, yeah, that guy's a pretty good player. I can't tell you what he's going to turn into in the big leagues, but you know, I'm not surprised that he's going to be a big league player. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your opinion of this guy, Matt? Because I went to band camp.
Yeah. I saw him 4 years ago on the camp. Okay. Yeah. I remember him. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. You once know? At band camp, I took the clarinet and we're going to stop there. Brian's in the truck. Brian, what do you got?
Well, real quick on Ohtani, imagine if Steinbrenner was still alive. Yeah. I feel like he would give up Jeter form. But my question to you guys is, when does Bloom make a move for some relievers to give this team some help? Because there's some real suck bags at the end of that bullpen.
To put it mildly, yeah. Go ahead, Matt. When would you make a deal?
I'd make a deal as soon as I possibly can.
Tomorrow? Tonight?
I mean, if there's somebody out there, yeah. And, you know, of course, there probably isn't going to be somebody out there at this point. But at first, I look to Workman. You know, see if he can give you anything in Worcester, see if he can turn things around. I bring him up in favor of Austin Bryce or Josh Taylor at this point. I want to see the Red Sox be aggressive early on here, Maz, when the trading market does open up, because this team is worth investing in. And I think you don't need to add any star players. You don't need to, you know, purge your farm system for anybody, but you can add players on the edges of this roster, role players, who can help you out. Because I think, you know, the fair criticism of Chaim Bloom is that the role players that he brought in, the vast majority of them, I don't think are good enough. And I think he missed on the vast majority of those guys. There's some hits. Looks like Richards might be a hit right now. Pivetta, that's a find. Whitlock, again, we talked about him. They're managing him differently. But this outfield, it's not good enough. Ottavino, if he's your eighth inning guy, that's not going to be good enough based on what we've seen. Kike Hernandez, I don't think that's good enough. The guys on the edges, the role players, he hasn't hit, and I want to see them address that because they don't need to improve this core. They need to improve the guys around the core. You should be able to do that without giving up too much. I hope they go out and identify a guy.
So look, the trade market typically, you know, starts to get more active the end of this month, beginning of June. Right, that's right. And really more accurately, it's probably the middle of June.
Yep.
So there's no reason you can't make a deal in June.
Absolutely.
I mean, everybody says the deadline's later, and the deadline is later it's what isn't later in the year now, period. They don't do July 31st anymore, and they push it to August 15th.
At least as of 2019, they did the one deadline.
Okay.
Lord knows what's I'm honestly going to have to look that up, what they're doing. And, you know, they were doing that pre-pandemic, or are they doing that post-pandemic? It's hard to keep track. But yes, they did that in 2019.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you have to wait until then to do it. So I would hope that,
In 2003, Theo Epstein traded Shea Hildebrand for Young-Hung Kim because there was a bullpen issue.
In May. It was the middle of May, I think.
And Dave Dombrowski.
I remember it distinctively. Yep. We were in Toronto. Go ahead, McCarthy.
Dave Dombrowski, that was one of his calling cards, too. He never waited for the market to develop. He added Pomeranz early. He added Pierce early. Dombrowski was aggressive early on. The Red Sox should be, too. You got a team that deserves an investment. Go out and get something done early on, because you're not waiting for the market to develop on the star players. They shouldn't be in on those guys. You should be in on the Addison Reeds of the world, the Steve Pierces, and I'm just going to, you know, the names that they brought in 17 and 18. You should be in on veteran guys like that who can come in and play a role. You don't have to wait for that.
So the callers know, by the way. Have you heard a caller a little while ago said he called in, he was McCarthy, was following the minor leaguers? Mm-hmm. McCarthy knows the minor leaguers better than I do, by a lot. And there is a minor leaguer right now for the Red Sox who should get your attention. We'll tell you who that is and why when we come back on the Baseball Hour.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Here's the designated talker mouth.
Swing that ass.
The Baseball Hour with Tony Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ohtani's doing from the...
3-1 pitch is swung on. There she goes. A high drive to deep right center field. Zinnege back looking up, and it's gone. Kristen Casas has hit 3 home runs in the last 2 games, and the Red Sox number one prospect comes up big here in the 5th inning. It's now a 6-2 game. Wow, what a bomb. Many think this kid has a chance to be special.
All right, look, it's a minor league play-by-play call. What do you want me to tell you?
It's a
visiting call, too.
Yeah, no fans in the stands, yeah. Like the whole nine yards, okay? You can hear the crickets for crying out loud.
That guy probably worked a 13-hour day leading up to that. He's making $623.22 a month.
And like, you would like know, Matt.
Like somebody, I can still tell you, $623.22 a month, Maz.
And you would know, Matt. Which games did you call?
Portland.
Okay, there you go. Portland, Cedar. That's a good level.
It was a great level to break into baseball, too.
So
it was awesome.
Well, that's a perfect segue because that's where Tristan Casas is playing now. And for those of you who don't know, you should know who Tristan Casas is if you're a Red Sox fan. If you're not, like if you're a more casual fan, which many of you are, Tristan Casas was the first round pick of the Dave Dombrowski Red Sox in 2018. I think he was like 26th overall or something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
Okay. Power hitting at the time, power hitting third baseman out of high school. They drafted him as an 18-year-old. So his first real full pro season was 2019. He played a little bit in the Gulf Coast League in 2018.
He got hurt. First or second professional game, he tore a ligament in his thumb diving for a ball at third base and missed the rest of that year.
Okay, so there you go. See, I told you McCarthy knows everything about the minor leaguers. Knows everything about them. So 2019, this kid goes to A-ball. At the time, Greenville and then Salem, and he just got promoted to it. Back then, it was low A and high A. Salem was high A. He got two games there at the end of the year, barely played, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But spent most of the year in A. Then, remember, 2020, no season. So he was in the, McCarthy, what do they call it, the satellite camp?
The alternate site.
Alternate site. I call it a satellite camp, whatever.
Sim City.
Okay? Same idea. So, well, first of all, tell me what you heard about him at the alternate, say it again.
The alternate site. Hashtag SimCity.
Okay. What you heard about him at the alternate site in 2020.
So it's important to keep in mind what you just mentioned. He hadn't been above single A by the end of 2019. He did not start the year at the alternate site. The Red Sox brought him up maybe in August. They said, let's get this kid some experience, and he's shown some stuff. He's our top prospect. We're going to bring him up, and we're just going to have him kind of be around. The reports I got from him from the alternate site was that he may have been the best hitter, period, the Red Sox had at the alternate site, which is very important to keep in mind. He had never been above single A. He was a 20-year-old kid who was coming in completely fresh, hadn't had a season at all, and was facing guys who weren't good but had been in the big leagues. He was facing older guys, more experienced guys. And when I tell you that people were absolutely raving about this kid and the at-bats that he turned in and his approach at the plate and his power and everything – this kid has a chance to be special. For a 20-year-old with no experience above high A, barely even low A, you know, at that point, to go into a triple A site and perform the way he performed against triple A and big league arms at the alternate site last year, it's no joke, Maz. Particularly a high school player, too. 20 years old. This guy has an opportunity to be really, really special.
Well,
and I don't say that too often because I've been there and I've done that. I've seen guys in the minor leagues that you get excited about and they get to the next level and they can't do it. So I temper my expectations with minor leaguers. My expectations are not tempered with this guy. He's legit.
Okay, so now here's what I would tell you. And again, all I've seen is highlights of the kid. He's 6'4", 250 pounds.
Yeah.
He's a moose.
He's a big boy.
And I'll tell you, if you see him, and I'm going by what I've seen on video, his upper body and his lower body don't match. His upper body is leaner. His lower body is massive. And I say, Matt, I'm talking about his legs and his ass. You can see where his power comes from. This kid can absolutely crush the ball. And he's not, it doesn't feel like he's your typical launch angle modern hitter because it feels like he hits for average.
As he's a hitter. And his approach is advanced. And that's why he was so successful last year at the alternate site. Because you're facing guys who, you know, will throw you 3-1 curveballs and stuff like that. They said his approach was so advanced, he's drawn comparisons to Joey Votto, who was, you know, one of the great pure hitters in baseball. Those are the comps you've drawn from Tristan Casas. He is not Bobby Dalbec. He is not Franchy Cordero. He's not one of these modern hitters who goes up there and swings out of his ass. This guy's got an unbelievable eye at the plate, and he knows how to hit.
Okay, so two things. One, you mentioned the eye at the plate, which I want to get to in a second. But let me just tell you that when you see where they have put him, you can always judge by how a team feels about a prospect, by how rapidly they move him.
Yes.
And that's an obvious point. As Matt said, this kid barely got to high A at the end of 2019. Played two games, seven at-bats. Then 2020 was a wash. So if you say, well, you pick up where you left off, he should be in high A ball. They put him in double A to start the year. He's 21. He had no season last year, and he had never played above high A. And out of the gate, he's hitting .313 with three home runs that were freaking pulverized.
Yep.
Okay, absolutely mauled them. Here's the other thing. I'll say this quickly, and we'll take a call before we go. The old formula was one walk for every 10 plate appearances. That's what you should want at a minimum. Okay, that is acceptable plate discipline. One walk for every 10 plate appearances. Before this season, this kid had 493 plate appearances, and he's got 58 walks. So the math should be 49 walks. He's got 58. So the point is, there's good plate discipline there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's it's not great. It's not like Frank Thomas walking 120 times a year when he was getting a walk every five plate appearances. But it's good. I mean, it suggests that at a young age, he's getting, and that will get better, by the way.
Yes, it will.
So that's a number that will go up, not down. And it's the signs on him are good, is what I'm getting at. Okay, and you already know this because you've seen him. And so as you consider a hitter like that with that kind of skill and promise, let's go to Joe, who wants to talk about Franchy Cordero. So go ahead, Joe. What do you got?
Well, I got two things. First off, I feel like, and you're talking about one walk every 10 at-bats, this goes directly to this point. You guys spent the last 3.5 years complaining about Jackie Bradley in the nine hole, and now you're complaining about Franchy Cordero when, like, you guys as the fourth state kind of pushed him out. Like, I don't know who I'm listening to, but Jackie Bradley walks once every 10 at-bats, and, you know, he was the second best historically nine-hole hitter we've ever had. Second point.
So, Joe, wait a minute. So, did you call me to celebrate the second best nine-hole hitter we've ever had?
No, it's not we've ever had in baseball history. His OPS and his average are the second best nine-hole hitter in baseball history.
Oh, well, that's
somebody
great. That's like tall. That's like
stupid Herald, like a couple days ago.
Yeah, no, that's like the tallest short person. Let's celebrate the second best number nine hitter in history.
It's calling the wrong show. Adam Jones comes up at 7 o'clock. That's who your anger should be directed at.
Yeah, look, let me tell you this, okay? I never said my big gripe with Jackie Bradley is the way people like the fans, like you, treated him. You talked about him like he was some sort of all-star Hall of Famer, and he wasn't. So, and if you think, you said you don't know who Chaim Bloom listens to, do you really think Chaim Bloom let Jackie Bradley go because Adam Jones or myself or Felger, that we don't like him? Do you really think that was a factor?
Garrett Richards wouldn't be here if I and Bloom listened to guys like us.
So again, I get it. I get it. You know, we're inconsistent with our arguments sometimes. Probably. I don't think as I'm inconsistent, and I frankly think you hear what you want to hear. But I will tell you that, you know, I just, Jackie Bradley was a .238 hitter. People talked about him here like he was Willie Mays. And because of the defense and the value of the defense, even though nobody puts the ball in play anymore. So somehow the defense still mattered. And do they really miss him? I mean, you can tell me he's better than Franchy Cordero, which, fine, so am I. So is McCarthy. Adam
Let's not
Jones,
go that far.
Adam Jones sucks, and he's better than Franchy Cordero. Who's not better than Franchy Cordero? We really going to use him as some sort of standard now? So, like, he's still throwing Jackie Bradley in my face? I haven't missed Jackie Bradley for a second. Not for a second. Sorry, Matt, that one got under my skin.
I understand that.
Bob and Methuen pissed me off last Friday. I kind of went off on Bob and Methuen. I've been meaning to apologize. Jimmy, do I need to apologize to Bob and Methuen? I
think no, not at all. It's in the context of the show. You're good.
I think it would be very big of you to apologize a week later at the end of the program, Maz. I think that says a lot about you.
It's all entertainment. He shouldn't be so sensitive.
I meant to do it earlier in the week, and I forgot. Here's what I tell Bob and Methuen.
How important it is to you.
Okay, so I got to get this off my chest now. Bob and Methuen, I didn't mean to jump down your throat. But if you really are not watching baseball because you don't like the owner of the Red Sox, I really do hope that you like the owner of your grocery store. Because otherwise you're going to starve. You're going to like shrivel up, and you are going to be malnourished. So I just think that's a bad reason to not watch a baseball team. You're entitled to do it. I just think that's a really bad reason to not watch a team. If you have to like the owner to watch a team, you'll never watch sports.
Maybe he's a real man and goes out and forages for his own food, Maz.
All right, Matt. Thanks as always for helping out here on a Friday.
Always fun, Maz.
And don't worry for the Bobs and the Bobs in Methuen, or the Bob and Methuens, and the last caller. Don't sweat it, because on a lot of Fridays, I won't shut you down like that, because Matt McCarthy will be here filling in.
Maz will apologize next Friday to that caller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Next week, you'll get your apology. Correct. McCarthy's got your headlines. Adam Jones is next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.